Are you toughest in looking out for yourself? Or does your greatest strength show up when you're standing up for others, a wife, your newborn baby, a struggling friend? Well, some of the Bible's meekest people were pillars of strength for others. Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth Richards. As Lonnie Melashenko continues with his series, As Meek as Mount Everest, we're delighted to be sending our listening audience a copy of a wonderful book entitled Disappointment with God by Philip Yancey. Details coming up very shortly, but first, let's rejoin Lonnie for today's Bible discussion entitled The Saving of Judah Ben-Hur.
It's been almost 120 years since America discovered a particularly compelling story that's touched millions of us. Ben-Hur. A Tale of the Christ. Perhaps you've read this wonderful book or attended the play based on it, or seen one of the two films carrying that title. Clear back in 1959, of course, actor Charlton Heston stepped in front of the cameras and recreated the Ben-Hur character with such force that the Academy Award voters decided this spiritual story was their best picture of the year. In fact, one of the news writers remarked that the studio needed a chariot to carry home the record 11 Oscar statuettes this one unique picture received. But you know, as we discuss the concept of meekness all this week, I find hidden in that filmed dramatization an almost perfect illustration. What does it mean to be meek? What kind of meekness does Jesus have? If you've seen this particular Ben-Hur on television, you may recall that we never really see Jesus himself on the screen. Charlton Heston portrays Ben-Hur, of course, and all through the film we only find hints of the Savior, especially when Judah Ben-Hur is being led through the desert with the other criminals on their way to the slave galley ships. There's a scene where they all stop to rest, and inside a carpenter shop, we glimpse a strong arm holding a tool. That's all, just a strong arm. A hint of a young man named Jesus of Nazareth. Then comes the moment that millions love so much. Judah Ben-Hur has collapsed in the dirt. He's exhausted both physically and spiritually. Will he ever see his family again? Will he ever survive this horrible journey? Will he die at sea chained to an oar as the Roman warship sinks beneath the waves? And as he claws for a drink of water, just a sip being provided by the kind Jewish woman, the Roman commandant blusters at her, "No water for him! No water for him!" Scared and trembling, she reluctantly obeys. Judah Ben-Hur gets no water. And now this slave is in complete despair. He falls prostrate on the ground, sobbing, "Oh, God, help me! Is life going to end right here?" Then suddenly there's a strong hand lifting his face. A strong hand brushes away the dirt and gives him a long drink of water. We only see that hand, that arm. But we know who it belongs to. And Judah looks up in wonderment at that face we can't see. Who is this mysterious man who has given him water? Suddenly the Roman officer looks over. What? Someone dares to give this prisoner a drink against his direct orders? What's going on here? Hey, he barks out, ready to assert his authority again. I said no water for him. He takes a step forward, girding up his loins for a confrontation. And then in a beautiful cinematic moment, this mysterious man slowly stands up. We only see him from the back, but as he stands to his feet with Judah Ben-Hur resting in his shadow, he seems to grow and swell in quiet strength. How tall is this man? He dwarfs the Roman commandant who suddenly stops in his tracks. And there's that long moment. Jesus Christ, defender of the weak and the dying and even the thirsty prisoner, doesn't say a word. We don't see his face. We don't hear any thunder. But somehow, this divine man has something inside of him that asserts its raw power. And the Roman officer kind of blinks, chews on his lip for a nervous moment, and then backs away. All in dead silence, he backs away. Now, friend, why is that such a riveting confrontation? Why is this such a powerful picture of good meekness? Well, first of all, it epitomizes the kind of quiet strength we talked about yesterday here on the Voice of Prophecy. Jesus Christ, without saying a word, simply stands tall on Mount Everest, and his enemies retreat. But the second point is even more stirring. Notice that the meekness of Jesus means that he is strong to defend others, not strong to defend himself. And you know, I believe that's actually the Bible picture of meekness. Strong and firm and unmovable in the defense of other people, instead of strong and firm and unmovable to defend ourselves. There's an interesting corroboration of this concept that goes clear back to the book of Numbers. In chapter 12, verse 3, this is what we read. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. Other versions translate this verse to mean that Moses was the most humble man on earth. We'd have to assume that someone else wrote this verse, this brief amendment, and dropped it into the book of Numbers years after Moses first wrote it. And we wouldn't expect that Moses would describe himself as the most humble man around. And sure enough, my text notes provided by expert Bible scholars suggest that this was most likely the case. But think about this man Moses, the meekest man on earth. A man who could have been Pharaoh, a man with such incredible gifts and talents that he was able to organize and then lead a group of perhaps 2 million Israelites from Egypt to Canaan. A man who masterminded all those military victories over many fierce enemy nations. This vibrant, spiritual giant of a man was meek. Friend, Moses was tough. He was strong in defense of others. When his people were under attack, Moses was there. When they were starving and thirsty and beset by plagues, Moses was their champion. It was Moses who interceded on their behalf. But when it came to defending himself, we see meekness. We see humility. All of this incredible man's inner strength is exerted for others, not for himself. Back even earlier in our Bibles, in Exodus chapter 32, we see Moses' meekness displayed two times. When God looks down from Mount Sinai and sees the idolatry and the revelry and the golden calf down in the valley, he tells his servant Moses, "Leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation." And how did Moses respond? He could have said, "You're right, Lord, they're no good. Dump them, kill them all, start over with me." But no. Moses exerts every ounce of moral persuasion he can muster, and he argues with God, he pleads with God for these no-good people. "Turn from your fierce anger," he begs. "Relent, and do not bring disaster on your people." Strong to defend others, silent in defending and promoting himself. But we find a heightened display of this kind of meekness a few verses later in this same chapter. The sin down in the camp was so evil, so complete, that 3,000 of the worst of the sinners have been destroyed. And Moses goes back up to the mountain a second time to see if he can atone for this worthless little flock he's inherited. And in verse 31 and verse 32, Moses throws himself on the Lord's mercy and listen to what he says. "Oh, what a great sin these people have committed. They have made themselves gods of gold. But now, please, forgive their sin. But if not, then blot me out of the book you have written." You know, I get chills reading that. Here was a man, a strong man, a holy man, a spiritual giant. But he's so committed to the spiritual defense of these rotten to the core sinners, so determined to protect them from eternal destruction, that he says to God, "If you can't save them, then take me too. Blot my name out too, out of that book of life." Well, maybe he was bluffing, you say. Friend, I don't think so. Moses understood raw, potent meekness, strong to defend others, humble and quiet in defending self. Well, say, how about Christ? Over and over again, he was strong in defending the weak. He picked up a whip to drive out the merchants who were destroying the spiritual haven of others. He looked daggers at a man or woman who would cause another person, maybe a child, to fall into sin. He was strong to look the Pharisees and Sadducees in the eye and describe how their sins were leading a whole nation to ruin. He towered over that Roman commandant who was keeping Judah Ben-Hur from those few drops of water. But when it came time to defend himself there in Pilate's court, Christ was meek. He said not a mumbling word, as the old spiritual tells us. Tell me something. In an issue like today's abortion debate, are you meek? Do you fight more for those unborn babies than you do for headlines for yourself? Do you care more for those scared young mothers than you do for the cause, for that giddy feeling of righteous pride? I'm doing something noble. I'm a soldier in the cause. But maybe soldiers understand this concept of meekness most. You fight more to protect others than yourself. You fight for your spouse and your children and your aged parents back home. You fight to defend the person in the trench next to you. If there's a bullet to be taken, you take it so someone else can live. It's clear that Lew Wallace, well-known 19th century writer, understood that. That's Major General Lew Wallace, officer in the Union Army during the Civil War. Well, after the war, he served as governor of the territory of New Mexico and also was a member of the court that tried those accused of assassinating President Lincoln. Another meek but strong giant. Of course, it was Lew Wallace who later sat down and wrote the incredible story, Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ.
It's a wonderfully spiritual story, Lonnie, and we appreciate the new insights today. Friend, the issue of trusting in God is so central to this week's entire discussion. That's why Lonnie and I are eager to send you a copy of Philip Yancey's best-selling book, Disappointment with God. For your donation of just $10 or more to help cover the necessary expenses, we'll send you this life-changing book, Disappointment with God. Here's our mail address, Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. For our Canadian friends joining us today, the address is Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L1H7V4. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-872-0055 and make your gift of $10 or more using a credit card. Let me repeat that number again, 1-800-872-0055. And please remember to include the call letters of this station. Back to you, Lonnie.
Thanks so much, Ken. Tomorrow we'll wade even deeper into this debate and ask a tough question. Are there times when it's all right to be mad? In fact, would it be wrong not to be mad then? It all fits into our definition of meekness, so I hope you'll join us. Here's our title, The Wrong Time to Be Mad. Lonnie Melashenko reminding you it's always true, friend. God loves you.
Making friends is an art that anyone can master. When Linda's new neighbor went away for an extended period of time, her grass took advantage of her absence and flourished beyond the proper aesthetic limits. Linda got out her power mower and in only 15 minutes mowed her neighbor's lawn. She never said a word about it, but eventually the neighbor guessed who had done it. For the cost of 15 minutes worth of effort, Linda made a new friend. Here's another true story. When Jim bought his family a new television set, the neighbors gathered one weekend to help them put up the antenna. Since Jim had only the simplest tools, he wasn't making much progress, until a man who was new on the block appeared with an elaborate toolbox with everything that was needed to get that antenna up in record time. As Jim and his family stood around congratulating themselves on this piece of good luck, he asked the new neighbor what he made with such fancy tools. He smiled and answered, "Friends, mostly. Everyone needs some friends in the bank to draw on in hard times, and it really doesn't cost that much to make a regular deposit now and then." By the way, when's the last time you made a friend?